Well, good morning. If I am not a familiar face to you, allow me to introduce myself. My name is Abby Norman, and a year ago, this Sunday, I stopped being an intern here at Eastside, and this stopped being my home church and became my sending church, and I was sent 3 miles down the road to what ended up being restarting a congregation down the road just past Starlight called New Hope. And we still, there is a relationship. We are in partnership in some ways with Eastside, and we're still working all of that out. Right now, we're just really friendly with each other and invite each other to our stuff. And I am occasionally asked to preach here. And I know that normally we have a few quick words, a scripture reading, and a prayer. But normally Tim doesn't ask anyone to preach a whole book of the Bible. One that all of you may not know. And while I totally nailed my Old Testament test 2 years ago on Esther, there were bits that I too had forgotten. So today we're going to do things a little differently because I'm preaching out of the entire book of Esther, which is perhaps my favorite text in the Old Testament. Y'all, it's a totally wild ride. If you are anxiously awaiting the final season of Game of Thrones, may I suggest that the book of Esther could scratch that itch for you. I'm serious, it's amazing. So would you pray with me? Lord, would you come and be with us today? Would you help us to remember that we are loved, that those in power are loved, that your desire is for all of us to be free? Would you preach through me and in spite of me as we seek to internalize your message so that we can spread it to the world? Amen. You are loved. The Facebook frames, the t-shirts, the very soft t-shirt I might steal from my husband. You are loved. This is a thing that this church has decided it believes. So much so that you make art out of it, that you put it in your yard signs, that you have hung it from the doors. You have decided that the thing you want to tell the world is that the world is loved. Not as a whole, but individually. You are loved. And then the question that begs with Esther in this space, at this time, with that message hanging from the front doors, is this. What does it mean to say that you are loved when a government is saying to some of our neighbors, you are expendable? And what does it mean to believe that the people in power are also loved? In the days of Xerxes, the king at the time of Esther, he threw a giant party. He wanted everyone to know how great he was, how much money he had, so that they would envy him. No one was better than him, and he desperately wanted everyone to know it. So for 180 days, he displayed his wealth for all to see and demanded that the people look at how great he was. Then he invited his most wealthy and influential people back to his private club for 7 days to eat and drink and drink and drink. On the seventh day, when King Xerxes was in high spirits from wine, He commanded the seven eunuchs who served him to bring before him Queen Vashti, wearing her royal crown in order to display her beauty to the people and the nobles, for she was very lovely to look at. But when the attendants delivered the king's command, Queen Vashti refused to come. Then the king became furious and burned with anger. So he checked with his friends, the friends who generally agreed with him that he was the greatest. And they decided that she needed to be reminded of who he was. After all, if this woman was allowed to say no to him, the other women in the kingdom may end up saying no to their husbands as well. And if women were allowed to say no in the castle, in the highest parts of society, what would happen down the line? Surely all the women would get the idea that they could say no when someone asked them to use their bodies for their husband's whim. And where would that put the world? So Xerxes used his infinite wisdom with the people he had surrounded himself with, who also wanted to keep their power, and advised that she should be banished, a statement to all women in the kingdom that doing what you're told, not making a big deal of it, is far better for you than believing that you are in charge of your own body. What would happen to the men? Wouldn't that put them at risk, allowing women to say what was and wasn't okay? So Queen Vashti is out, and when King Xerxes sobers up, he wonders what has happened to his wife. See, a whim of his that he barely remembers has completely destroyed Vashti's life. But it's just a dim, drunken memory to him. He is a king without a queen, and this is inconvenienced, and that looks bad. So he invites everyone around the kingdom to enter into an ancient version of The Bachelor. And every virgin in the kingdom is roped into staying at a harem, and the girls are all brought to the king one at a time. And amidst those girls is Esther, who is young and beautiful, and also a Jew, a member of an oppressed class in the society. Talk about intersectionality. In the midst of a king meeting his own needs is this woman who doesn't matter because she's a woman, because she's young, and especially because she's a Jew. But those decrees are from King Xerxes, from times and traditions and histories of the day, and despite what the government has said, God still says that Esther is loved. And Esther's uncle, an old man who is pretty much ignored and worthless, advises her to lay low. Because even though God isn't mentioned literally one time in this story, Mordecai, her uncle, thinks that God might be up to something bigger and better than King Xerxes. So she goes to the seat of power, nothing more than a woman who is hoping to catch the eye of Xerxes. And she's not an ideal Jew. She eats the food, she follows directions, but somehow she is favored and chosen as queen. Now, the king was attracted to Esther more than any one of the other women, and she won his favor and approval more than any of the other virgins. So he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. And the king gave a great banquet, Esther's banquet, for all his nobles and officials. He proclaimed a holiday throughout the provinces and distributed gifts with royal liberality. Meanwhile, in other parts of the kingdom, Esther's uncle has overheard people saying that they were going to kill King Xerxes. So he tells Esther, Esther tells the king, and those attempting to plot against Xerxes were promptly impaled on a stake. And then Mordecai was not thanked, but completely forgotten. So while Mordecai is ignored, a man named Haman is exalted. And everyone but Mordecai bows down to Haman. And Haman is really irritated that this old, silly man won't bow down to him. And he finds out that Mordecai is a Jew and promptly goes to the king, saying, "There is a certain people dispersed among the people in all the provinces of your king who keep themselves separate. Their customs are different from those of all the other people, and they do not obey the king's laws. Is it not in the king's best interest to tolerate them? If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued to destroy them, and I will give 10,000 talents of silver to the king's administrators for the royal treasury." So the king took his signet ring from his finger and gave it to Haman, son of Hammedeth, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. "Keep the money," the king said to Haman, "and do with the people as you please." A leader who finds people totally expendable puts his slogan on an act of hate. He doesn't do it himself, of course, but he certainly encourages the elements surrounding the mass killings of the Jews. I mean, they're different. They don't follow the same rules. They might cause a threat to the power, and hey, who even knows if they are safe? Why couldn't they be just like him? Well, Mordecai finds out about this plan and goes to the outskirts of the temple with his sackcloth and ashes and cries out in agony and grief. So loud is his wailing that those who are taking care of the king's harem go to Esther and tell her something is wrong with her uncle. She attempts to give him fine clothes and tells him to stop making a huge scene. No one listens to someone crying out. "Keep your voice down, uncle. Check your tone. Be a little more respectable." But Mordecai will not be respectable. So Esther goes out to find out what he wants. And what he wants is for her to use her position and privilege. "Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. But you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this." Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai, "Go gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days or nights, and I and my attendants will fast as you do. And when this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." And while all of that is happening, Haman is reminded of how much he hates Mordecai, and he gets this giant stick out ready to impale him in 10 days. And then Esther goes before the king and asks for a special banquet for the king and Haman to be at, just the two of them. Well, he says yes, he loves being with Esther, and Haman is very excited about the good news he's sure he's going to get. And at the banquet, Queen Esther finally speaks, "If I have found favor with you, your majesty, and if it pleases you, grant me my life. This is my petition, and spare my people. This is my request. For I and my people have been sold to be destroyed, killed, and annihilated. And if we had merely been sold as mere male and female slaves, I would have kept quiet, because no such distress would justify disturbing the king." And King Xerxes asked Queen Esther, "Who is he? Where is the man who would dare do such a thing?" I love this part. And Esther said, "An adversary, an enemy, this vile Haman." Then Haman was terrified before the king and queen. The king got up in a rage, left his wine, went out into the palace garden. But Haman, realizing that the king had already decided his fate, stayed behind to beg Queen Esther for his life. And just as the king returned from the palace garden to the banquet hall, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was reclining. And the king exclaimed, "Will he even molest the queen while she is still in my house?" And as soon as the words left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs attending the king, said, "A pole reaching to a height of 50 cubits stands by Haman's house. He set it up for Mordecai, who spoke up to help the king." And the king said, "Impale him on it." So they impaled Haman on the pole he had set for Mordecai. Then the king's fury subsided. Finally, Esther and Mordecai suggest an addendum to the non-refutable decree to kill all the Jews, and Xerxes allows the Jews to fight back. This saves them, and all 10 of Haman's sons are also impaled on poles. Mordecai and Esther are remembered forever as those who saved the Jews. The end. I know people are like, "The Bible is boring." I'm like, you're not reading the right parts, okay? A ruler easily swayed by beautiful women and power-hungry advisors, a series of decrees that have very little thought to the people they will hurt, a leader who's hiding away in his castle, unaware that the policies he is enacting are life and that death to those on the streets. A person shouting that oppressed lives matter as though working for the king comes out of the palace to explain to them that screaming like that is incredibly unbecoming, and standing in the way of commerce is not going to win them friends nor influence people. And a few people with unique perspectives scattered throughout the kingdom attempting to pay attention to what God is doing and how they should respond when mostly God seems to be letting the chaos reign. And people say the Bible is no longer relevant. Esther was loved. This much seems clear. She was loved by Mordecai, who pushed her to be great. She was loved by Xerxes, who found her to be so beautiful, he was willing to give her anything she wanted. She was loved by the Jewish people, who saw her as their savior and the one who speaks for them and saved them, even though it could have been the death of her. And she, though it isn't ever specifically mentioned in the text, seems to be favored by God, loved by a God who positions her right where she needs to be spared, to be the victor, to get Haman killed on his own spike intended for her uncle. I love that part. But here's the part I've been wrestling with this week and since Tim invited me to preach today. Of course Esther was loved by God. I mean, look where she ended up. But if worldly success is my calibration of being loved, what does that say for Vashti? Vashti, who's only mentioned right at the beginning, who probably was asked to come before her husband and all his drunken friends, wearing her crown, and only her crown. A woman who merely said, "No, thank you. I will not parade around a bunch of men who've been drinking for 7 days. I think that's probably a bad decision on my part." Who is then banished forever, a decree that would ruin her life. And one that the king even barely remembers making. I mean, he sobers up and he's like, "Hey, where's my wife?" Was Vashti loved by God? Would I be able to look Vashti in the face and say, "You are loved by God"? Where is God for Vashti? And the conclusion that has come to is, I think Vashti knew she was loved. I think she knew she was worth so much more than her beautiful body for the king to show off to his friends. I think it took a lot of courage for her to say, "I'm not coming over there. You have got to be kidding me. I will not be parading in front of your little friends because I know and beautifully and wonderfully made. Vashti's dignity is worth more to her than her safety. She would not be subjecting herself to the whims of the king. And y'all, the king banished her. The system that was there in the days of Xerxes is the same system we have today. One that seeks to push those who demand their own human dignity out. Because the power is crasslessly wielded to the sides where they would be completely ignored forever. And a system that asks us to then go ahead and blame Vashti. She didn't obey the law. She didn't bow before the king. Why couldn't she just do what she was told? And then she's never mentioned again. But that doesn't mean she wasn't loved. And it certainly doesn't mean that she didn't matter. For without the brave civil disobedience of Vashti, this story never would have been told. And I imagine that the warnings of Vashti were whispered to the girls in the harem getting ready to see the king. You know what happens to women who say no to Xerxes. You don't want that happening to you now, do you? She got what was coming to her. Don't be too big for your britches, lady. Women who say no, who make a fuss, who embarrass men in front of their friends are expendable. Remember that. And I have no doubt that it was impossible to forget in the king's harem with the king's eunuchs eating the king's food in the king's palace exactly who was in charge and what could be done if you didn't stay in line. And I also wonder if the story of Vashti wasn't somehow a call to action for women like Esther. There once was a woman who came before you, who didn't go forth on the whims of the king, who believed she was loved even when the world believed she was expendable. I wonder if the example of Vashti, so believing that she was loved, so believing she had inherent dignity the world was not set up to give her, didn't make Esther a little bit brave. I wonder if she thought of Vashti perishing when she told Mordecai, "If I perish, I perish." The book of Esther, the story told, relies on twists and turns and dramatic irony. And the experts will tell you that it is a tale of perfectly balanced ironic reversal. A planning scene in the middle, banquets at the beginning and at the end, those who are supposed to be the winners end up being impaled on sticks they had set up for their enemies. And Esther is a truly impressive piece of Hebrew literature. Balanced, dramatic, funny, entertaining. But this reading really glosses over the very first reversal in the whole book. King Xerxes asked Vashti to come and display her naked self to him and his friends, and she refused. She believed she was worth more than those in power thought she was worth. She believed she was loved and could not be reduced to a plaything for the powerful. That is where this story starts. And it is, I believe, the most powerful reversal. It is a reversal that also happens in Esther's life. Esther believes she is loved. Believes she has at least enough power to take a chance on being banished if it means her people could survive. Esther decides she is worth the risk, that the Jewish people are worth the risk, even if the powers that be want them to believe that they are expendable. The law may say she is worthless, both as a woman and as a Jew, but she refuses to believe there is nothing she can do. And she refuses to stay quiet and safe. She takes her chances because she is loved, because her people are loved, and she knows that. She knows it because Mordecai reminds her, because he gets people to support her. She knows it because she looks around and realizes that she has been favored, and she knows it because Vashti went before her, sacrificing everything she had to the truth that she was loved. The reversal in the book of Esther is a reversal of a lie that some people matter and other people don't. That the government gets to decide who is treated as valuable. And most strikingly to me, in this time, in this place, at this church, it is a reminder to me that we are not without agency. Because most days I wake up, check my Twitter feed, and I'm reminded that chaos reigns. It is very easy for me to feel like there is nothing that can be done, that I have no agency, that I have no power, that what I will do does not matter. But that is not what the Bible tells us about ourselves. Yes, everything feels like chaos, but y'all, that is not new. It is not new. This very same sermon about a ruler who was distracted by beautiful women and had powerful people surrounding him telling him not quite the truth could have easily played out in the 90s when the other side was in power here in America. So what are we doing? Where are we? Where are we physically? Where are we in our jobs? Where are we? What position have we been put in, and what position is that for a particular reason? How are we being called to first remember that we are loved so that we can look at our friends and neighbors and say, you too are loved? What would it have meant for Xerxes to believe that he was loved? That he didn't have to have all of these women parade in front of him, that he didn't need everyone around him to tell how great he was? What would it look like for Xerxes to believe so deeply that he was loved, that he could look at the Jewish people who other people were telling him were a problem and say, no, you know, I think they're loved too? This would have been a very different book with very different winners and no losers. I think one of the things this story can tell us is that we need to pay attention to whose voices we are listening to. Xerxes comes out okay in the end, but mostly, I mean, he looks like an idiot, right? But he didn't kill the Jews. Hey! So, and why didn't he do that? Because he was willing to listen to those who had a very different perspective than him. Who had a very different perspective from him. I am learning to listen to the black women in my life. Mostly because, y'all, they're almost never wrong. It's incredible. They're like, this is what's going to happen. I'm like, that's crazy. How did you know that? Right? And the truth is because that is what has been happening. Right? I mentioned the 90s because that was when politically this country tried to disassemble welfare. It's the same thing. It's happening over and over. And some of us are just waking up to this because we are just willing to hear the voices that are not like our own. It is comfortable and safe, and it feels good to surround yourself by people who tell you how wonderful you are. It feels good. It feels great. And also, sometimes they're not telling you the whole truth. We need to pay attention to those who are suffering the most. We need to listen to them and to hear them, and then we need to lead with our actions. And y'all, it might be expensive. We might lose power. We might lose money. We might have to say in front of everyone, we were wrong, and we changed our mind. And that is hard. But also, I think we owe it to the next generation. I think we owe it to the next generation to say, we are loved, and our neighbors are loved, and this is how it could look. So we're going to start there. I think that it is so much easier for Esther because Vashti believed she was loved. It cost her everything. And then an entire people group were saved. What if we walked out of here and thought, I am so loved, and you are so loved, and we will fight for you to know that. Amen.